to continue on this topic of Gerus, and then hopefully learn a little bit for Parshas Korach, in the pages that we have in this essay, in this collection from Olamot.net, he has two pages from Tchumim, and that's an essay written by Rav Tzvi Lifshitz. And I thought that maybe we could go through this essay, this two-page essay, and it'll give us an overview of the issue of Gerus in our time. He begins, I'm not going to read every word inside, but again, if you have the text inside, it's good, by telling us that there were two very severe cases that as of recently have been dealt with in front of the Beis Din for Gyur. And the question that arises in both cases is whether we should cancel the Gerus. So we have the first case, Mikra number one. We're talking about a woman who made Aliyah from Russia, and she was already married to her husband in a civil marriage. She came in front of the Beis Din, they investigated her, and according to their understanding, they found her to be Re'uya L'Gir. She accepted the mitzvahs, she went for tefillah, everything seemed fine. The tefillah itself was delayed because she was pregnant in an advanced state of pregnancy. Now, as a result of certain medical considerations, the marriage was delayed, and the clincher of the Gerus, meaning the final stage of the Gerus, which is the tefillah, was delayed very close to their wedding. She actually went to the mikveh on Friday. She got married the following Friday, 1 week later, in the afternoon, and she was married by a Rav, Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. Then Beis Din found out about the celebration of the wedding. The wedding itself took place on Erev Shabbos, but the celebration took place on Shabbos. There was no kosher food, and not only that, there was Chil Shabbos. So this is case number one, and the question is, did she fool us? We were duped into thinking that she was genuine about her Gerus, and now, a week later, we find out that this was not a genuine Gerus. So should we... Right. When you have a couple that come together for Gerus, if they're married, then what we do is we set up two dates. One date is for the Gerus, and the next date will be for the marriage. We'll have a Chuppah Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. In this case, the Chuppah Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael, which is unusual, took place almost immediately after the Gerus. And what's more unusual about this case is that right after the Chuppah, right after the marriage ceremony, there was a clear-cut indication that they weren't interested in a religious wedding. They would violate the Shabbos immediately after the chuppah at the very celebration of their wedding. Were we duped into this Gerus, and the whole premise of the Gerus is now undermined? And therefore we should cancel the Gerus. That's case number one. Case number two is a young man by the age of 25 who comes from a Western country, Western Europe. He shows up in front of Beis Din after studying in what we call an Ulpan for Giyur. By the way, the Ulpan for Giyur usually takes 6 months to a year, if not longer. And he makes a really fine impression on the Beis Din. They were absolutely convinced that we're talking about a Geret Tzedek, who is undergoing conversion for the right reasons out of sincerity. 2 years later, an article is published in a newspaper about this man, and in the article in which he was interviewed, he presents himself as a homosexual who's been living with men over the course of years. During his time in the Ulpan, when he was studying Gerus, which took place in one of the kibbutzim, he was already at that point, you know, public, if you know what I mean. And he continued in that way of life, following his conversion until today. He was asked in this article, apparently, if I understand correctly, what is going to tell the Beis Din when they say that he achieved his goal of conversion, shelo biyosher, meaning by duping them, by misleading them. So the essence of his response was, it's true that I got their agreement to make me a Jew, shelo biyosher, but as far as I'm concerned, I became a Jew biyosher. In other words, I achieved my geirus the way I want to achieve geirus. In other words, he didn't deny the fact that this whole thing was shelo biyosher, but he couldn't care less. You know, he has his own, you know, he writes his own script as far as geirus is concerned, and for him, that's all he wanted to achieve, which probably means that he would be registered as a Jew. Here in Israel, that means the law of return, that a Jew has certain rights, and he gets what's called a Tudat Zahut, he becomes a citizen. In any event, he writes that not only was this man living with other men, but he wasn't observing the mitzvahs. We have absolute proof, what's called raglayim l'dover. Raglayim l'dover is a phrase for, you know, very strong circumstantial evidence. When one of the dayanim met him a week after the geirus, he was not wearing a yarmulke. It seems quite clear, although he came up with some sort of flimsy excuse, you know, maybe his yarmulke fell, you know, was you know, carried off by the wind, or some story he came up with, but, you know, all the pieces of the puzzle fit into place that this was not a serious geirus. And now the question that we have to face, excuse me, in both of these cases, case number one with the woman who was married a week later, and case number two with the man who is clearly homosexual, shall we cancel the geirus based on what we know now? Based, you know, retroactively, based on the fact that we realize that from the get-go, there was not a Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs, this was not a sincere geirus. There wasn't even 1 hour in time when they were sincere about a commitment to Torah Mitzvahs. He adds a postscript here, it's sort of like a footnote. He says, in this essay, I'm not going to question all the facts on the ground. For the purpose of this essay, he says, I'm going to assume that all the information that we have is totally reliable, and these are the facts on the ground. Therefore, I'm going to focus on the nekudot, on the points that are relevant to this question, and you have to, he says, expand barachava and go into detail about the nature of geirus, and can we and should we nullify or null the geirus based on the information that we have now, and we know clearly that we were fooled.
I have a question.
Yes, please.
Okay, so let's say a potential Garrett doesn't want to be here, and I'll be corrupt, and I'll learn, and I'll all these things, right? And a week after Garrett, you find out that he treat those income tax. That's a bad example. So you see, the guys over there, obviously. But my question really is, what type of error would you say you want on another
case? Right.
Or could it be something like your one, or do you have to be the riser or whatever? How do you figure that out?
I would say the following. If, even in a case of a drabbanon, it would depend why he's violating the drabbanon. And there are two possibilities. One possibility is, he violates a Torah law. People are overcome by their tivus, by the Yetzirah. But there's another possibility, that he violated the drabbanon because he rejects the authority of the Chachamim. He says, I know better than the Chachamim. Like, for example, the Gemara at the beginning of Brachos that says when you come home at night, you should make a beeline straight for the shul in order to recite Kriyat Shema and Tefillah, because if you go home, you'll eat a little, drink a little, go for a chapa, a little dribble, and by the time you wake up, it's already morning. So therefore the Chachamim said, the latest time for Kriyat Shema is Chatzot. So the Gemara adds the following. It's a brisa. And it says that if a person makes a statement, he declares, I don't care what the Rabbanim said. I'm not afraid that I'll fall asleep. I'll tell my wife to wake me up in a half hour. He has an alarm clock. And he thinks he knows better than the Chachamim. The Gemara says, Chayav Misa. So all of the first should say, what do you mean Chayav Misa? So he didn't daven and recite Krishra before Chatzos. Okay, give him a patch, but why is he Chayav Misa? So many of the Farshim say that this man is rebelling against the Chachamim, yet he doesn't want to accept them. The mitzvah of Lo Sasur and Vasisa Klash Yerucha is not on his radar screen. But basically, David, the answer to your question in general terms is that, what's with this Ger? Does he want to accept the mitzvahs? Is he sincere about the mitzvahs? Or he never really accepted the mitzvahs to begin with? If he's sincere about his gerus, he may fall prey to the Yetzirah on this Avera, that Avera, and so forth and so on. But to tell me that because of the Yetzirah, they organized the wedding on Shabbos, just a week after the gerus, in a non-kosher restaurant, to say that they fell prey to the Yetzirah, but they really had a sincere acceptance of mitzvahs, to say that this man has been a homosexual for years before, and when he's challenged in front of the journalist, they interrogate him, and he says, "Yeah, I fooled the Bezdin." you really have to come to the conclusion that the man was never serious about mitzvahs to begin with. Now, I'm not telling you, David, it's always going to be crystal clear, which category we're dealing with. But those are the general guidelines. Now, again, why am I excited about this article? Because he really gives you an overview of a lot of the issues that we addressed last week. The most important issue of which is that the Torah calls Geirus Mishpat, and from that we learn that you need three mumchim. Well, guess what? We don't have mumchim bizman hazeh. So the Ri and Tosfos, not only here in Masechta Yevamos, but also in Gittin and in Kiddushin, presents and formulates the principle called Shlichu Sayukav Dinon, which means that the original Beis Din of Mumchim, back in Eretz Yisrael, has appointed the Batei Dinim of Hedyotos throughout the generations to fulfill their Shlichus. And now the question becomes that if, according to Tosfos, the entire enterprise of Geirus in our time is predicated on Shlichusayukov Dinon, can we say that we didn't really live up to the Shlichus of the original Beis Din of Mumchim? Because they certainly would not have appointed us as their Beis Din to represent them, to be their emissaries for a Geirus that's based on falsehood, on a major mistake. There was never a sincere Geirus. So should we say that the Geirus is Batel in both of the cases that we're addressing? Because it's not Shlichus Sayukov Dinon. This is not Shlichus. Now, at this point, on the bottom right, he quotes two Rishonim, that disagree with Tosfos, and that's Rabbeinu Nisanel, who's quoted by Tosfos and the Ramban, and they have another explanation, another answer to the question about the enterprise of Geirus Bizman Hazeh. According to Rabbeinu Nisanel, it's derived from the Pasuk Lidoro Seichem, which means that Geirus exists during all generations. When there's Mumchim, then we need a Bezdin of Mumchim. When there's no Mumchim, we can drop that requirement, and the Torah would recognize a Bezdin of Hedyotos, three judges, as a Mishpat, as a Bezdin for Geirus. In which case, Geirus is Doraisa, and it's not dependent upon Shlichusayu Kavdina. So that there's no, according to Rabbi Nisano, there's no, what word am I looking for? There's no invalidation of a Bezdin here. Bezdin is not your issue. It doesn't mean there aren't other issues. You know, there may be issues in the Geirus itself, that the Geirus itself was invalid. But not because we're lacking the proper status of a Bezdin, because we don't have Mumchim and we don't have Shlichusayu Kavdinon. In other words, we're only halfway there. I'm not going to tell you right now that according to Rabbi Nisanel, in these two cases that we addressed, the Geirus is valid. That I'm not ready to come to that conclusion. What I'm ready to conclude, according to Rabbi Nisanel, is that you cannot passel the Geirus because of Bezdin, that we don't have Mumchin and we don't have Shlichusayu Kavdinon. And the same is true according to the Ramban, because the Ramban says that the requirement of three judges for Geirus is really derived from a Hilchos HaGemirlon, and the word Mishpat is only an Asmachta, and the Hilchos HaGemirlon did not say a word about Mumchim. So basically the Torah itself recognizes a Bezdin of Shlosh Edyotos as a Bezdin for Geirus. So we have now Rabbeinu Nisanel, we have the Ramban, and they disagree with Tosfos. They would not go down the path of Shlichusayu Kavdinon in order to disqualify the Bezdin. We don't need Smuchim in order to achieve Geirus. Again, I can't overemphasize the fact that we still have to deal with the Geirus itself. Was the Geirus itself meaningful? Geirus means a commitment to Tayag Mitzvahs. So we'll get back to that a little bit later. Now, do the poskim quote Rabbeinu Nisanel and the Ramban? And the answer is no. Basically, the Beis Yosef, the Ramah, the Sma, the Nesivos, they all bring down the halacha, Tosfos, and again, as I said before, it's Tosfos in many places, Shlichusayu Kavdinon. So our issue, first and foremost, is do we apply Shlichusayu Kavdinon? Now, in order to answer that question, we have to ask an earlier question. And that's on your bottom right, going on to the top left. And that is, does Shlichusayu Kavdinon generate a Geirus Doraisa or a Geirus Darabanan? If it's Doraisa, then it may have a very far-reaching scope and application. Where if it's Darabanan, then we really have a serious question as to whether Rabbanan would be satisfied with our Shlichus in these kinds of cases. Why are we convinced that it's Darabanan? Because Tosfos applies the following principle, that why did the Chachamim, back in the time of Smicha, why did they give Tokef, how do you say it in English, authority, that's the word I mean. Why did they grant authority to our Batei Dinim? The reason for that, says Tosfos, is Kidei Shalotinol Deles Bifnei Gerim. Tosfos has a principle called Lotino Deles, which the Gemara applies to allow in Dine in Halvos. Again, that's if you hold Erev Parshas to that. Even in Odos, we need in Halvos and Odos, we need a Bezin Shel Smuchim. And the reason why our Bezin Shel Smuchim is operative, is valid, is authoritative, is because of Shlotino Deles Bifnei Lovin. And Tosfos applies the same structure to Geirus, that we don't want to close the door for Geirus. It clearly means that the entire enterprise of Geirus Bizman Hazeh is the Rabbanan. Now again, you could ask me 1,000 questions. Does that mean that every ger is only a ger d'rabbanan? The Nesivos HaMishpat is famous for asking, what if the ger was Makadish and Isha, and then some other Yisrael came was Makadish the same Isha? We would have to be Choshesh for the Kedushay Sheni, because on a Doraisa level, she could have been married to the first guy. He's a ger, and that ger is d'rabbanan. So in the Torah, we don't recognize the gerus. The Nesivos is so convinced of the power of this question that he wants to suggest that even though Tosfos clearly indicates that the entire enterprise of Geirus today is the Rabbanan, that's not what Tosfos means. He had to rewrite the Tosfos. What Tosfos really means is that the Torah authorizes the Rabbanan to institute Geirus, implement Geirus whenever the Rabbanan see fit. And the Rabbanan will decide that they see fit, Kedesh Lotino Delis Bifnei Lovin, to implement a Geirus in front of a Bezdin of Hedyotos, and now the Torah recognizes that Geirus. And this is a case, and I think we've discussed this on many occasions, where the Torah gives authority to the Rabbanan, and once the Rabbanan exercise that authority, it becomes valid on a Doraisa level. That's the way the Nesivos wants to go. But he admits at the end, his postscript is that he admits that it doesn't seem like the Rishonim are operating with that. Yeah, David?
That sounds like Lo Susser a little bit, no?
Sounds like a stira?
So it sounds like Lo Susser.
Lo Susser, oh, Lo Susser. Yeah, it's like Lo Susser in the sense that the Torah is granting authority to the Rabbanan, and when the Rabbanan exercise that authority, the Torah will recognize the chalos, the efficacy of what the Rabbanan institute. It's almost like saying, for example, that I wrote an article on Yichud, that Yichud is Doraisa. What do you mean Yichud is Doraisa? The Sugya clearly indicates that Yichud is Rabbanan. The answer is that the Torah recognized the authority of Bezdin to generate the Isur of Yichud, and once the Rabbanan tell you when it's Yichud, or the Rabban about Isur Malach on Chol HaMoed, that Isur Malach on Chol HaMoed is Doraisa. What do you mean Isur Chol HaMoed is Doraisa? It's all based on the Rabbanans, and all the Rabbanans had, you know, the five different cases when you're allowed to do Malach and Sof Darav and blah blah blah. The answer is that the Torah gave the authority to the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan will approach it from the, anyway, that's the Nesivos. I don't want to spend the entire shiur on that, but it's a fascinating Nesivos. He says the following, that the Gemara in Gittin is the source for this concept of Shlichusayu Kavdinan in the case of a Get Me'usa. A Get Me'usa means that the husband refuses to deliver a Get to his wife, and we force him to do so. So the Gemara asks, how can we force him to do so? For that we need a Bezdin of Smuchim, and the Gemara answers, Shlichusayu Kavdinan. The Gemara then says, well, what about Zelos V'Chavolos? Why do we insist that there has to be a Bezdin Shel Smuchim? Why not apply the principle of Shlichusayu Kavdina? And the Gemara answers that Shlichusayu Kavdina only applies in a Milsa de Shchicha. And to force a husband to give a get is Shchicha, but Gzelos V'Chavolos is Lo Shchicha. Again, just a comment on the side, very difficult to understand what the Gemara has in mind. And as we go through this essay, you'll see there's a great bilbul amoach here, a great confusion about what constitutes a milsa de shchicha. In any event, the Ran says that gerus is not a milsa de shchicha, but he says that afal gavdalo shchiach choshev kishchiach. What does that mean? Choshev kishchiach. If it's not shchiach, it's not shchiach. Tosus on the other hand says, no, Geirus is Shchia. So here he has a tshuva from Rav Kook, and Rav Kook talks about a very fluky case where the Geir comes to this guy, he doesn't want Mila, he brings a doctor's note that he's not healthy enough for a bris Mila, and Rav Kook says, this is already a Geirus below Shchia. I mean, when was the last time you had a Geirus without Mila? And therefore, lo avdin shlichusayu ledas hatosfos. Rav Kook says we cannot implement shlichusayu kavdin in this fluky case. And you see clearly from Rav Kook that in a case of a fluke, some very unusual set of circumstances, the gerus is not valid and there's no shlichus. Why? Because the Gemara says that shlichusayik avdin is conditional on shlicha. So this Rav Tzvi Lifshitz, the author of the article we're studying in Tchumin, right away draws a conclusion as far as the second case. Again, let's go over it. The first case is that we see that the Gerim are not observing the Torah. You know, they're violating the Shabbos, let's say. Okay, maybe that's possible. It's, I don't know exactly again what Shchiach means in this context. But he says that a man is living with other men. We never knew about this. And he was mekabel the Torah without Mishkav Zachar. He says clearly that's a milsud lo shchicha. And there is very solid ground, he says, to undermine that gerus because there's no shlichusayuk avdin on it. In other words, he's willing to compare the case of a man who doesn't have mila with a man who is a homosexual, and in both cases, he says, this is going to be a gerus that's lo shchicha and does not come under the rubric of shlichusayuk avdin on it. Oh. Now I'm a little bit confused here because I'm looking at the clock. I don't want to spend too much time on Gerus. I really prepared a Chumash class for today. So what we're going to do is we're going to cheat a little bit, and I guess it's not so Yosher Dick, but we're going to go to page 2, which is page 11. Do you have this page? Page 11, the next page. And he says that there are a number of cases that came up in the history of the last 100-150 years of Bate Dinim that were Megayer someone, and the poskim had to decide that even though or whether or not the Gerus is valid when we find out that the Gerus was not sincere. So for example, on page 11, if you take a look at the middle of the right column, he has a tshuva from the Beis Yitzchak. The Beis Yitzchak's name was Shmelkis, Rabbi Yitzchak Shmelkis. And he had to decide on a case of Geirus L'Shem Nisuin. And the whole motivation for the conversion was for marriage purposes. And in a minute we'll see that in certain Sephardic communities, down south in Argentina and also in Syria, They took a cherem that we don't want gerus because there was too much gerus going on, which was only l'shem nisuin. But again, we'll get back to that in a minute. So the Beis Yitzchak wanted a paskin that perhaps since the gerus was done be'isur, in other words, l'chatchila, we certainly wouldn't have allowed for such a gerus, which is totally insincere. Shall we now undermine the gerus because it's not shlichu sayukav dinon? Why? Because ain shlich l'dvar vera. This kind of a gerus is against the Torah. And we have a principle that shlichus is not valid if it's against the Torah. And he comes to the exact opposite conclusion. Why? Because the Gemara has a case of a ger that was misgayer on Shabbos. He went into the mikvah on Shabbos. We're not allowed to do this. Gerus, like other kinds of kinyonim and chalosim, are not to be implemented on Shabbos. So there was an Iser going on in the very tefillah that they allowed the tefillah sager on Shabbos, and yet the established halacha is that the gerus is valid. I ain't shliach l'dvar avera. So he gives an obfuscated answer, which I don't understand exactly, but he says that we're not going to be mevatel gerus midin shlichusayu, even if there was a clear-cut iser in the gerus, because although the iser was l'chatchila, but by the end of the gerus is chal. He doesn't tell you exactly why, but the assumption you get from the tshuva is that the principle of ein shlich l'dvar avera doesn't apply in this context. Why is that so? I don't know. So the author of this article, of this essay, tries to explain the Beis Yitzchak. why don't we apply Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera? And he suggests the following, that the din of Shlichu Sayukov Dinon is not a relationship to each and every Gerus, so to speak, meaning any Ger that comes to Mizgayer, we have to be Megayer and Midin Shlichu Sayukov Dinon, but rather Shlichu Sayukov Dinon is a method, is a mechanism by which we recognize the Bezdin as a Bezdin Haroi L'Gaya. He calls it a Din Klali. Hanogela Dayanim, in other words, we're going to say Shlichu Sayukov Dinon as long as the Dayanim are Ksherim. If there's no Psul in the Dayanim, then we're going to say Shlichu Sayukov Dinon, and they now become the Dayanim who are capable and authorized to generate Gerus, to implement Gerus. We don't have to look in every single case and decide whether or not it's Shchiach or not Shchiach. The mechanism of Shlichu Sayukov Din is only to set up a Bezdin of Dayanim Ksherim. And therefore, he says, if the Dayanim Ksherim made a boo-boo, they made a mistake, maybe they didn't judge the situation correctly, they didn't realize what was going on here, they were duped, and there was a failure to understand and appreciate that this was a motivation that had nothing to do with accepting Gerus, it was just for external reasons, that's called a toes. He says, we're not going to undermine the Gerus based on Shlichu Sayukov Dinon, because again, since the judges and the Dayanim were Shlichu Sayukov Dinon, I mean, they were considered a Bezdin of Ksherim, of a valid Bezdin, that's enough to achieve Shlichu Sayukov Dinon. We're not going to look at every single Gerus and say, well, are they Shluchim of the original Bezdin of Smuchim, or maybe it's Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera? No. We're going to only use Shlichu Sayukov Dinon in order to recognize the authority of the Bezdin. And therefore, he says that I understand the tshuva of the Rishon Letzion, Rav Uziel. His last name was Uziel. His name was, Ben Zion Uziel. He was the Sephardic chief rabbi at the time of the establishment of the state. And he got very upset with the tshuva of Rav Hirsch Pesach Frank, who was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, because he wanted a paskin that in those countries like Argentina, where they accepted a cherem not to be megayer gerim, that b'dieved, if a group of rabbis got together and they violated that cherem and they megayer gerim, the gerus is invalid. That was Rav Frank's psak. Why? Because you cannot say shlichu sayukov dinon since they violated the local cherem against gerus. And Rav Uziel takes offense against this tshuva, and he says, no, impossible. He says that you're not going to tell me that this is on the left column here, the third paragraph down, Gamma Rav Uziel, Vecholi Quazel Rav Frank, Be'inyan Takonas Argentina, Shevamokum Sha'ovrala Takona, says Rav Frank, they violated the Takona Be'isur, Lo Avdina Shlichu Sayu, and we're not going to recognize. He says, La'nius Daiti, it's not so. That even though they shouldn't have done so l'chatchila, but b'dieved ein hatakona yechol levatel mafreas hagerus. Again, it's the Sephardic rabbi. This cherem was among Sephardic communities, not all communities, but a few communities. They were totally against gerus. In addition to these two tshuvas, which he has from the Beis Yitzchak and from Rav Uziel, he has very similar tshuvos from Rav Herzog, who is the chief Ashkenazic rabbi at the time of the establishment of the state. And again, he says, if they violated the takana of Argentina, nevertheless, ein levatel sagerus midin shlichu sayu. He has a tshuva from Moshe Feinstein. Not exactly a tshuva, it's a commentary on Yevamos called the Dibros Moshe. And Rav Moshe writes, again, we'd have to go through the whole thing, but we don't have time. Shaladina lo mashma shageris b'teilo midin shlichu sayu. So again, let's just try to make sense out of all this. the first half of that shiur, of that discussion, indicated quite clearly that Shlichusai Ukavdinan would not operate in cases where Beis Din would not have been authorized to implement and supervise the Geirus. Again, we can't tell me that this is a valid Geirus. There's no Shlichusai Ukavdinan. But now we're at a turning point because we're reinterpreting Shlichusai Ukavdinan. It's a Din Klali, and it's only relevant to set up the Dayanim Ksherim. So Einoch Hinami, if these Dayanim are Psulim, you can find a Psulim Dayanim, then for sure there's no Shlichusai Ukavdinan. But if something happens and a mistake was made in the evaluation of the Ger, but the Beis Din was acting in all good faith, that's called a toz, but nevertheless the psak is binding and the gerus is valid, and there's no way of undermining the gerus and being mevatel through Shlichusai Ukavdina. Now if you're following me in the text, we're almost at the end. You'll see the last two paragraphs. Yavid me'ata, give me just one more minute, Joe. Me'ata tiparei maskenosenu l'shnei amikrim. He wants to say that the final conclusion splits depending upon which case you're dealing with. He says the following, that in the second case, even right this minute, we can deal with a serious issue of Shlichusai Ukavdinan. This is not Shliach. This is not the kind of Shlichus that we had in mind. If you would ask me now, with all that I know, would I be Megayer, this Western European fellow who's living a different lifestyle? For sure it's not Shliach. It's not a Dover Gadol. There's no reason to apply the principle of Shlotinol Delis Bifnei Gerim in such a case. We now have clarity, l'mafreya retroactively, that there was never Shlichusai with regard to this case. However, in contrast, in the first case, true that we have spekos, we have doubts as to whether or not there was sincerity, and maybe there was Ramos here because a week later they had this wedding, but nevertheless, the Beis Din was acting in good faith, and therefore they had the status of a Beis Din. And now, you're going to tell me that we're going to undermine their original Geirus because of Shlichusai Ukavdinan? They weren't a valid Beis Din? Why? Because later on, there was Chol Shabbos? That's not an invalidation of the Geirim under the law of Shlichusai Ukavdinan. However, that's only as far as the status of Beis Din is concerned. Now we have to face a different question. And that is Hayim Yesh Levatel Sagerus. Maybe we should still consider revoking, annulling the Gerus, the Ar Klole Halacha, according to the general rules and the preconditions for Gerus. Namely, if it becomes absolutely clear that this was not a Gerus, the whole thing was fake news, it was Ramos, then it could be that there's no Geirus here because there was never really Kabbalah's old mitzvahs. So again, there are two roads here. There are two issues. One issue is that we have to ask ourselves whether the original Beis Din was functioning as a Beis Din under the rubric of and the authority of Shlichusai Ukavdinan. Here he wants the distinction between the two cases. There's no way that you can call this a valid Geirus. If the person is living that kind of lifestyle, this is not what we want as a Geir. Don't call this a Dover Gadol. Don't tell me that we are doing their Shlichus because this is what they want. They don't want to accept this type of person as a Geir. But if you're talking about the first case, this is a couple that wants to live a Jewish lifestyle. Again, what is a Jewish lifestyle? So now we have to ask ourselves, was the whole thing a fake because they didn't really want to commit themselves to Torah mitzvahs? But don't tell me that the Beis Din is invalid. And he says, "B'mikrim elu," he says, I can't read the next word here, Shel golim mirachok bo. Just 1 second. Oh, he says that in this case where they came from far, shalavdu b'meshach hashanim esuhusam ayudit utotzaam ikach itarvu ben hakoyim yesh lanu ladun b'giyura. So he wants to suggest that maybe there's a possibility that if we were megayer them, then they would be part of the Jewish people, part of the Jewish community. Until now, they've been living amongst goyim. Can you imagine Russian Jews who are living under communist Russia, and there was no influence towards their, you know, to identify as Jews, and they were just misarvi ben goyim. Now they come; they want to be part of the Jewish community, and we may be able to hold out some optimism and hope that the Jewish community will have a positive influence on them, and they'll want to observe the Torah and mitzvahs. That's what I got out of this article. Great, Joe.
The Gemara is full of issues with regards to, you know, protecting the name of Beis Din, right? We do things, we allow certain things, because you don't want the people to look at the Beis Din and determine that there's any kind of question. Is that what they're trying to get? Is that what he's trying to get to here with regards to this situation? What's the mechanics in place that Beis Din is, this is a valid Beis Din? So therefore, we can't look at anything that they've done. It's Beis Din. We have to keep up the proper name, and therefore, is that what he's trying to get at?
I didn't see that in the article, Joe. Because if that be the case, then you have to know, you know, what kind of Beis Din you're dealing with. He doesn't speak about the institutionalized Batei Dinim. You know, there may be Batei Dinim that are here, that are there. And I'm not sure if it's always going to be what we call a Beis Din Kavua. I don't know. He doesn't specify that. I just have the essay in front of me. Again, this is a small fraction of the essay, and it's a small fraction of the other 10 pieces that he has in this anthology.
So what's the, you know, what does it matter if they've set up this Beis Din or not? You know, the rules are clear with regards to what the Ger is supposed to be doing.
Yeah, so it's again, that is an issue as far as the Geirus is concerned, but we're asking an issue as far as the Beis Din is concerned, meaning the question that he addresses from the beginning of this essay is, does Shlichusayu Kavdinon undermine this Geirus? And he's claiming that Shlichusayu Kavdinon is not an issue in this particular Geirus, but rather it's an issue in the Beis Din. And if we can draw the conclusion that this Beis Din is made up of 3 Edyotos who are experienced, they're intelligent, they were operating in all due... Do you remember the details in the first paragraph? They checked her out. There was every indication there was sincerity. You know, there was a olpan for Gerus. You know, everybody, all the Dayanim would like take it away. They were swept away by the sincerity. Here's a pregnant woman who came on Aliyah from Russia. She's living with her husband, and they want to go through Gerus, and they want to go through Gerus when she's 9 months pregnant, have another marriage ceremony. And we checked them out, we investigated, and it looked pretty good. You know, we asked them all the right questions, they gave us all the right answers. So again, you can ask 2 issues, there are 2 different issues. That's what his claim is. One issue is, was this a real Geirus? The other issue is, was this a real Beis Din? If you're talking about Shlichusayu Kavdinon, which is the subject of his essay, because there were many poskim who wanted to say, well, this is not Shlichusayu Kavdinon, that's not what they had in mind when they appointed us as Shluchim. He says, that's not true. When they appointed us as Shluchim, they weren't asking, let's, you know, look with a microscope at every single case and see, well, did the Beis Din do exactly what we would have wanted to do? And if they didn't, then the deal is off, there's no Shlichusayu. That's not, again, I'm just presenting his thesis. Again, he himself admits that not everybody accepts this, that this is a pretty new idea. But he claims that based on all those tshuvas of Geirus that took place without the right criterion, you know, it was L'shem Nisuin, it was a violation of the Cherem, it was on Shabbos, it was blah, 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 and all the different cases, and he has a whole list of poskim who validated the Geirus. I mean, these are not second-class poskim, aren't you? You know, you're talking about the Beis Yitzchak, you know, you're talking about the Igros Moshe, and so forth, and the list goes on and on. Why were they recognizing the decision of the Beis Din? The answer is because they held that it was a valid Beis Din, and hence Shlichusayu Kavdinon. Now we have to ask a different question. Maybe we were duped, and there was never Geirus. Now we have to look at the other conditions of Geirus. You know, Geirus is not just a matter of Beis Din. Geirus is a matter of Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs. Was there Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs? He's not addressing that issue. He says that if we have reason to believe that maybe there was a kind of a Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs, you know, it wasn't, a Satmar Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs, but it was, you know, a quasi Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs. They want to get, you know, Lischomotam, how do you say in English? You know, they want to be washed into or brought into the Jewish community. Then maybe we can hold out faith and hope that the Geirus will be a sincere Geirus. It may take a little time, and maybe over the course of time we'll see that it was a sincere Geirus, that they really did want to observe Yiddishkeit as a Jew. All right, now we have about 5 more minutes, so at least I can give you an introduction, maybe whet your appetite, to a piece here for Parshas Korach. And
next week to us.
Yeah, right.
Oh, wait a minute. For you, it's next week's Parsha.
Yeah, it's a Shlach this week.
Oh, yeah, you know, you just reminded me of something. One of my Talmidim is here in Eretz Yisrael with a group of Rabbanim. He's a Rav in Richmond. So he asked me if we have a Sefer Torah here in the ELC, if they could organize a minyan and read last week's parasha, and then they can be yotzei this week's parasha. I forgot about that. Well, we're going to catch up to you soon. I mean, you'll catch up to us in Matas Masa. All right, so Joe, you have to go. All right, so I'm just going to give a 5-minute introduction. If anybody could stay, because officially we still have, I think, 3 minutes. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly when we end, but there's a very interesting issue here about Korach, to understand what motivates Korach, who he is, and why he suffers the punishment and the death that he suffers. And the interesting thing here is that there are indications that what happened to Korach is very similar to what happened to Cain. Cain, as you know, killed his brother Hevel. So these two brothers were adversaries. And Hevel's adversary was Cain. Cain was guilty of jealousy. Why did Hashem take his brother's carbon and not his, and accept the carbon? And here we have another two individuals who are adversaries. We have Korach as the adversary of the rebellions against Moshe. So guess what? The Arizal, who's the expert on Gilgulim, he claims, and this is really developed by the Shaloh HaKadosh, that Korach is a Gilgul of Cain. And Korach suffers from jealousy the same way that Cain suffers from jealousy. And there's going to be a striking resemblance here between the punishment in both cases. Because what happens is that Moshe Rabbeinu chooses a particular kind of death for Korach, and that is in Bria Yivra Hashem Upatsasa Adoma Espiha. And as a result, we find that the earth swallows up Korach Vadoso. If we rewind to the parasha of of Cain, then we'll find that the earth swallows up the dam of Hevel. Furthermore, the punishment for Cain is going to be Novinod Ba'aretz, Novinod Tiyad Ba'aretz, which means that you will have no What word am I looking for? No, second for salva. Can you give me an English word for that? No rest. No peace and security. Excellent. Thank you, Bobby. No peace and security. Well, the punishment for Korach is very, very similar. Why? Because normally, when a person dies, their body is buried. That's the guf. And the neshama, the nefesh, goes up to Shamayim. And that's called menucha. In the case of Korach Adoso, he goes down Sha'ol, chai, alive, and there's no menucha. The body and the soul are still, in a sense, trapped together. And that's very similar to Nav Nod Tia Ba'aretz. What we're going to try to understand in this essay is that, assuming as the Shalah develops it, that Korach is a Gilgal of Kayin, Moshe is a Gilgal of Hevel, Korach is cholek on Moshe because of his jealousy, and that jealousy is an old jealousy, it's the jealousy of Kayin for Hevel, then in both cases the Adama gets involved in the curse. And we're going to see exactly what is the significance of this equation between the sin of Kayin and the sin of Korach, and to what extent is Korach capable of achieving a tikkun, a rectification of the sin of Hevel, if Korach finally concedes that Moshe emes v'toraso emes. And will there be a tchias hamesim for Korach? And will Korach finally find a state of menucha? And we're going to show and illustrate that Kayin really never achieved a state of menucha. He was always a fugitive. He never really had rest and security. So b'li neder, unless I find something more exciting for next week, which I might do, so I'm not. I don't want to commit myself. But there's this essay. So let me take this opportunity to wish everyone a wonderful day and a great week. And thank you for coming. And again, we haven't solved all the problems of Geirus. I didn't expect to do that, but at least we have a little bit of a taste of where the issues are going.
Berzon, just to let you know, I sent something through Shar Shemayim.
Oh, so that's very nice of you.
I spoke to them and whatever, so...
Bobby, you remind me when I was in Canada the second year. I used to have a Ramban shir in my house on Midvale. I don't know if you remember such a thing. So one of the fellows shows up, one of my disciples shows up on Purim. I'm not going to tell you what he gave me for Shalach Manos. I mean, it freaked me out. And I said to him, what does that have to do with the mitzvah of Shalach Manos? So he told me that, I don't know if I'm quoting him correctly, but that, this is almost a decade ago. He said that in Toronto, we have to look for excuses to express our Hakara Satov. And Purim is a great excuse. That's what he told me. So that was the chutzpah that I had to send out that email. All right, anyway, I want to wish everybody a great week, and thank you. Thank you so much. I called to
you. Can I have one more question before you go?
Yes, please.
Let's say a potential Garrett says, I'm over with over Evan.
Wait, David, can you come a little bit closer now that nobody's here?
Let's say a potential Garrett comes to the base then and says, I'm over with over Evan. Whatever that has to be. So is that, you tell the base to say, sorry, you're over with over Evan, rejecting our authority or better.
He admits to the Beis Din at the time of the Geirus that he's not interested in fulfilling a mitzvah.
So he says, I'm more than a rabbi. One thing I can't do, whatever it is. One thing I can't do, whatever I can't stop doing, whatever it is. He says, but otherwise I'm going to be Shomer Shabbos and I'll, fulfill every day and everything else. But one thing I actually cannot do.
Is he saying that he's not committed to that mitzvah, or he's saying that he admits that it'll be difficult and challenging for him?
No, it's the Amor of the Talmud, right? He says, I actually have to be selfish or something like that.
For some reason, David, I'm having trouble hearing you. What does he say?
He says, he's mumar l'teyavon for davar echad.
Oh, he's a mumar l'teyavon for davar echad.
Yes.
You know, he's telling you that he's definitely going to eat chazetreif. He just can't, he loves lobster. He can't overcome his temptation to eat seafood.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, that means that he, according to halacha, he's not committed to that mitzvah. That's not gerus. If he tells you up front that there's one mitzvah that he's a mumar, and I'm telling you, rabbis, forget about it. You know, I'm there in your treifa restaurant tomorrow night eating seafood. That's not gerus.
Okay, sure, thanks.
All right.
Thanks.